This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, we'll chat with Tom Pappas, who's, of course, a member of the City of Portage Veterans Committee. Some interesting topics to bring up of interest to veterans here in Northwest Indiana. A little later, we'll also have a lengthy conversation talking about the new Arts and Sciences building on the IU Northwest campus in Gary. It also includes classroom space for Ivy Tech Community College, and we'll have representatives of IU Northwest as well as Ivy Tech Community College with us, and the City of Gary as well, too, to talk about the economic advantages of the new building at the campus in Gary. Once again, we have in studio Tom Pappas, who is a member of the City of Portage Veterans Committee. They have a meeting coming up here very soon into early September, and I thought, well, with the holiday coming up here, the opportunity to bring you in to talk about that and about some other issues of interest to veterans here in Northwest Indiana. Thanks once again for coming by.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Let's talk about the upcoming meeting in September. What is
September 6th.
September 6th.
First Wednesday of the month. We're going to do something different. We're going to have an interactive benefits presentation. We're going to review all the benefits that the VA offers to veterans and their families and spouses. And as we go through the presentation, veterans and spouses in the audience can guide us to whatever next subject they want us to present on.
That's interesting. And it'd probably be a long laundry list for people that aren't familiar about the benefits that are available.
I'm figuring it's going to be two, maybe a three-month presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's. I hope we're getting more spouses. More spouses need to come. If their husbands don't understand what their service earned them, how can the spouses know what their husband's services earn the spouses?
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see what all is covered, because you think of the obvious things like health care and,
yes,
and, of course, the GI Bill or this new version of the two. Those are a couple right there. So you've got a couple good starts, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that don't understand about the educational benefits that are available once they get out of the service.
That's correct. There's so much out there, and there's so little knowledge because it's such a broad subject.
Is the plan that you want to try and bring some experts in of these specific areas? Can you do that, at least the ones that are available in Chicago?
Down the road, and that's part of what we're going to do, we need to determine. We've been kind of doing the shotgun approach. Mm-hmm. Whatever specialists we could get in, we brought in. But we need more direction from the veteran population. Exactly what are they wanting to know about?
So it's important to make it to that meeting on September 6th, then.
It is. The first, again, it may last 3 months, every month. It's such a broad subject. But then when we're done, we'll know what the veterans, which way we should be going as a committee.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned some of these, of course, of topics that have come up individually in the past, and as you just mentioned as well, that you have some specialists that have come over, especially lately in healthcare,
yes,
with the changes that have happened since they've had leadership changes at the VA hospital in Chicago, and in turn affecting what kind of impact will have on the outpatient clinics like the Adam Benjamin Clinic that's here in Crown Point and other areas as well, too,
yes,
even over in Illinois.
Well, you know, there was a big article in the Times yesterday about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to write a letter to the editor, to the Times, bringing to their attention that at most of our meetings, we have the woman who handles the crisis line for ABJ in the audience. So if there's questions about suicide, there's a person there in the audience can answer them.
Here again, just comes down to making it over to Portage,
yes,
to the
sir,
meetings,
yes,
in this case on September 6th. talking about improvements here, we've had quite a bit of time spent on about improvements for healthcare. Some of it is what the overall VA healthcare system is doing because of all the publicity and the problems that have happened. Luckily, at other health facilities, not in Chicago but elsewhere in the country, and the improvements that are being made by the new chief at the hospital in Chicago.
Yes, well, the Denver fiasco has changed the direction. Of the VA. I'm sorry, it was Denver, the big $1.5 billion VA medical center. And there will not be any more medical centers built. The new way the VA is going is with what they call health care centers, providing basically the same services as a medical center without the beds. And that's the closest one is finishing construction in St. Joseph County, about an hour east of us.
Let's talk about that, and in particular, what kind of impact that would have with that new facility in the South Bend area would have on the Adam Benjamin Outpatient Clinic in Crown Point. And you say there's a call, I guess, by some who are concerned about wanting to be sure that all of the services at ABJ, as it's known to veterans and other people, should be up to par with these new facilities, like the one that's going to open up in St. Joseph County.
Yeah, well, two things are happening. I've had discussion with veterans that live over to the east of us, like in Hannah and places east of Valparaiso, and they're looking to go to the new St. Joseph Healthcare Center and leaving ABJ. Why? Because the broad range of services that are being offered at the St. Joseph Healthcare Center. There's serious talk, and I had discussions with his staff over at ABJ. They're looking to upgrade ABJ to provide the same level of services. The problem I see is funding. That problem is compounded by the fact that the veterans organizations in Northwest Indiana are not working together. And that's a shame. It's going to take a push to get the funding. I'm not sure. I can guess maybe $10 million, maybe $5 million, until there's a service assessment done at ABJ to figure out what services they can provide along the lines of telemedicine, telehealth. Until you can determine what you can do with the existing facility, you don't know what kind of money you need to upgrade.
Mm-hmm. This facility here in Crown Point is less than 10 years old.
Yes.
In fact, the older original facility is still physically standing there at the corner of 93rd and Broadway. And, of course, the new facility is on the block just to the west of that, directly behind the building.
Yes.
And there's plenty of room, I guess, for expansion of the new facility. But I guess the question, as you say, is what kind of expansion should take place?
Yeah. You got to determine how much money you need to go out to our U.S. senators, ask for the money, but until you know what, how much money you need, meaning what kind of expansion needs to be done, you won't know, can't ask for the money.
Now, have the folks in Chicago at the hospital on Damon Avenue, have they been supportive of some of these ideas for expansion?
Yes, very supportive. In fact, the Post Tribune, Jerry Davich, is interviewing the director tomorrow, so I'm hoping by Sunday there'll be a nice article in the Post Tribune. He's very supportive. It's a situation where if we can get the services at ABJ that exists in St. Joseph County, the need for veterans to travel to Jesse Brown could be reduced up to 70%.
That certainly would be very important for those folks that have to travel from as far away as South Bend and Elkhart and even some points to the east, because they're just far enough away from Fort Wayne to try to make it to the facility there, and it's closer for them than that.
Hannah is basically in between. That's a halfway point. Mm-hmm. Takes as long to get from Hannah to Crown Point as it does from Hannah to Mishawaka. So anybody over that way is going to go to St. Joseph only because of all the extra services that are offered, like a CT scan. They're going to do comp and pen exams. If you look at what's at ABJ and what's at in St. Joseph, it's a big, big difference. But there's potential. Like my wife and I do volunteer work every Friday now at ABJ, and I was talking to the administrator of the facility. She found out that when they built ABJ, they had built a pad for a portable X-ray unit. Mm-hmm. Trailer in, X-rays. Well, now the big thing is open MRIs or CT scans. So I brought that to the attention of Jesse Brown, the minister director himself. So I'm hoping we can look and find out if one of those portable units can come on a regular basis to ABJ. Just like we're exploring getting funding for what is called a mobile medical unit, MMU. Mm-hmm. That would go out throughout the country and where the veterans live a fur piece from ABJ and provide basic medical service, blood draws, thing like that, where the veterans wouldn't have to come to ABJ. There's a lot in the works, a lot of vision. This director has more vision than you can shake a stick at.
Well, it sounds like with this portable medical unit that you're referring to, the veterans who live in Newton and in Jasper counties, yes, would have a much easier time of getting some of these basic things,
yes, sir,
done instead of having to travel all the way into Crown Point.
Yes, sir.
And then just only come to Crown Point to take care of special issues, or if they have their regular nurse practitioner appointments, they're going to have to come into Crown Point.
A lot of that could be handled through the MMU, mm-hmm, okay, and telehealth. And well, it's telehealth meaning you'll sit in front of a camera and a TV, and you do a office visit electronically. Mm-hmm. You won't have to come to ABJ. You can go to a mobile medical unit. Or if you wanted to stretch it out, go to the county hospital or a county outpatient clinic where they can have a room set up and you can communicate directly.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully that we'll have an opportunity to talk with, for example, in this next month sometime, talk with the people from the new facility opening up in St. Joseph County to give veterans here an opportunity of what's available there for those veterans that are on our eastern edge of our listing area, and they in turn would like to check that facility
out. You could do a telephone interview, couldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we could arrange that too.
I think we could make that one happen.
The reason we bring it up is because they have the facility is not officially open yet. I understand, but it will be very soon, within a matter of a few weeks or so.
September 29th is the grand opening, but that'll only be one section. They'll do two more kind of grand openings as they finish the facility.
Mm-hmm. How long, as far as you know, have they been working on this particular facility?
I think it's coming up 2 years now.
Mm-hmm. So it's one that certainly that veterans here in Northwest Indiana that happen to live closer to that particular facility,
yes,
should look into.
They should.
And obviously then here they're coming to Crown Point. We want to be sure that they get the care that they need. It's just that the question comes down to, and this comes back to the problems that have happened nationwide with the change in the system altogether of trying to give veterans who live too far from a medical center the opportunity to get the help that they need.
Yes. And this is a quantum change within the VA to what they're trying to do now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope we have a chance to talk with some people from the new facility in St. Joseph County here in the next
few
weeks.
I'll do my best to make it happen.
That's Tom Pappas, who is, of course, a member of the City of Portage Veterans Committee, talking about issues that affect Northwest Indiana veterans. And as always, Tom, thanks for stopping by today.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking here on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. Our next story comes from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs them with intentional conversations to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
My son and I just have a one-bedroom apartment, but we don't need much. I mean, he has the bedroom, I sleep in the living room. It's not a big deal. For $473 a month, we have a home. It's nice, it's clean, it's near things. There's air conditioning in the summer. There's heat in the winter. All the basic needs we need, Housing Opportunity has helped to make things more affordable for people in my type of position where I'm just receiving Social Security disability, which is only $1,200 a month. It's hard to live on that. For me, it's difficult. For me to ask for help, it's very difficult. Maybe it's because I was told no, because when I wanted the food stamps and they said, no, I make too much money. And then I think, well, maybe I am doing something wrong because $1,280 a month is what I get and I'm not eligible for food stamps with two people in the house. So what is the poverty level? There, at the end of the month, we have nothing. And we're waiting for the month to end so we can get paid again for the following month from Social Security. And it's not a healthy way to live. It's stressful, very, very stressful sometimes, because there's mornings that you wake up and you think, I don't know what I'm going to do for dinner tonight. And you're rummaging through your cabinets and you're pulling things together and making a mishmash of what you have. But sometimes it's that bad. Sometimes it's really bad. And thank God for the food pantry, because that's what I usually do, is I usually save it to the end of the month when things are bad, and then I go and I get something from the shelter that they have there for food for a week. I'd be lying if I'd say no. No, there were times that I did see that there were too many people that were on food stamps or too many people that were taking things that they shouldn't rightfully take. I have changed 360 on that. Because I know I've been victimized by it. So I know now that those people that do get the food stamps or do get government housing or Section 8 or whatever it may be, get it because they deserve it or they've earned it or they in a situation that there is no answer. But not sometimes until you go through it do you understand what it's like to be in that position where there is no other answer. That's what opened my eyes.
And you can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. A neighborhood in Muncie is one of many in Indiana that's considered a food desert. There's no access to fresh food or hardly any food at all. A branch of the local library system in that particular neighborhood has now opened up stores to help. And as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Stephanie Weekman tells us, the neighborhood council is urging residents to visit the library to get, of all things, fresh food items. And here's what Stephanie Weekman had to say.
I was driving here the other day, and I was crossing Walnut, and I realized there wasn't one place to buy food anywhere on this side of Walnut. Not a village pantry, not a mini market of any kind, and no grocery store, and especially now with Marsh leaving.
That's Jay Zimmerman with the Whiteley Community Council. As the director of the neighborhood food pantry, open once a month for only a few hours, he saw the need for more access to food, especially fresh produce. Now the council is hosting a food box in Connection Corner, an all-tech branch of Muncie Public Library in Whiteley, across the street from Longfellow Elementary. Connection Corner Director Rebecca Parker says the supply of produce and shelf-stable food is open to everyone for all the hours the library is open.
There is no barrier to entry whatsoever. I will not ask any questions. I don't ask for ID. I will point you toward the food box and ask you to take everything that you need.
The food box is actually two sets of wooden shelves. On its second day of operation, it's full of zucchini, squash, tomatoes, and beans donated from Minatrista. After its first day, Parker says she saw an immediate need.
We had about 12 adults utilize it, and we had about 8 children take food home to their families. Some people took one or two items, some people took an entire grocery bag full, and we had enough that we were able to replenish throughout the day. Our hope is that we will continue to have that supply and be able to meet the needs as they arise. We have a number of different suppliers, so we really hope that whatever the need is, we can rise up to meet it, but only time will tell on that.
We're going to have as much produce as we can possibly have. That all depends on growing, and it's, you know, this year we had all that rain at the beginning, so things got started late. And I think probably the produce will go into the late fall. And from some places, depends on who we can establish as partners, may have greenhouses in which they grow food, so we may be able to have produce year-round.
On the shelves, there's also bottled flavored water and healthy chips. Parker says a lot of neighborhood kids spend their afternoons at the library, and she wants them to have access to healthy after-school snacks. She says the kids were curious about the food, but not everything was a hit.
The kids all tried nasturtium yesterday.
What is that?
It's a decorative flower, but the leaves are edible and they're kind of spicy. Minnetrista dropped it off, and the kids were kind of checking out the food box, and they were like, can we eat something off of here? And I said, well, a lot of this stuff you would want to cook first, but these are greens. Do you want to try the greens? And they took a bite of the nasturtium, and then all of them just kind of stuck their tongues out. Do we have to eat the rest?
Muncie Public Library Director Akila Nosakir says the new food box fit with what Muncie Public Library is trying to do for the community.
The library has always been a community-based service when it came to information, and we've always been grassroots-based. We're seeing the need as a library system, and we're trying to fill it and working with other organizations to fill that need of food security. Because, yes, I live in Whiteley, and I know there are no grocery stores nearby, and it's just totally unacceptable.
Zimmerman says an Ohio farm with a mobile market will also offer food for sale in Whiteley on Tuesdays and Saturdays. And the community council is looking for more community partners and donations to keep the library food box full. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Stephanie Weekman.
It's not necessarily true, but pigs are often considered dirty animals. They smell, they like the mud, and just like humans, they can often carry different strains of influenza. In the past, outbreaks of the swine flu have shut down some barns. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lindsay Wright reports that researchers are using Indiana's fairs to learn more about swine flu, and it in turn has led to changes in how pigs are kept across the state.
9-year-old Aiden Campbell is cleaning out pig stalls at the Monroe County Fair. It's his first year in 4-H, and he's been raising his pigs to show at the fair since January. But this isn't a new activity for his family.
Oh my gosh, well, just our family, we've been doing it for about 10 years.
That's Aiden's mom, Stacy Campbell. She says the process is a learning experience she believes is important for her 5 kids. But there is a risk associated with not just raising pigs, but being around pigs in general, swine flu. About 5 years ago, most of Campbell's pigs tested positive for it. And around that same time, in 2012, State Board of Animal Health Public Information Director Denise Derer says public health officials were realizing that some forms of swine flu could be passed between humans and pigs.
What really was the big difference was is it was the first time in the U.S. that we had people and pigs in the same environment getting the same strain of flu at the same time. And so we knew it was passing back and forth between the people and the pigs.
That year, 138 people with known swine exposure tested positive. This year, the Morgan County Fair had 370 total pigs on the grounds. That's a record, and it's a lot of pigs coming from different places and staying in close quarters. It's the perfect place for Dr. Andrew Bowman, an assistant professor with the Department of Veterinary Preventive Medicine at Ohio State, to do some research.
And so we've used fairs as a place to get pigs from lots of farms in one spot so we can see what strains of flu are out there instead of going farm to farm to farm.
His team began the research project in 2009, traveling to fairs mostly in Ohio, Michigan, and Indiana. They find influenza at about a quarter of the 100 fairs they attend. Right now, they're testing 20 randomly chosen pigs in Morgan County.
Basically, if there's 15% of the pigs that have flu, we have 95% confidence that we're actually going to find it when we sample.
They take a nasal wipe to the pig's nose, put it in a viral transport, then freeze it for 2 months. And although it's not always an enjoyable activity for the pigs, it all serves a purpose.
We don't want to have any regulatory impact. We're not regulatory in any way, shape, or form. This is all purely research. And so they sit in the freezer so that we don't have any impact on the fair. By the time we know the results, the fair is long over.
Over the years, research has shaped recommended policies for fairs and those raising pigs. Some include getting pigs vaccinated or checking their temperature upon entry into barns. Although researchers learn more each year, strains of the flu virus come and go in mysterious ways. A fair in Clinton, Ohio, tested positive for flu virus this past July. The state veterinarian ordered the barn to be quarantined and the animals slaughtered.
We had a lot of pork owners who were concerned we would adopt that policy in Indiana, and so we spent a lot of time trying to allay their fears, and that's not the normal protocol that we would follow. That's not something that we expect that we would do based on having flu in a few animals.
Even though the animals wouldn't necessarily be slaughtered, Dara says the pigs would need to be taken out of the barns immediately to reduce the chance of exposure. She says it's important to continue learning about flu viruses for the sake of fares, humans, and the animals.
Here, give me this, please.
Back in Monroe County, Campbell says as someone who cares for pigs, she appreciates the research. She says her family wants their pigs to be healthy.
It's a risk that you take with anything. I mean, you can have a house animal that would get sick, too. It would be the same thing. Or your children, you know, you'd take the same precautions.
Experts say pig owners should actively watch over their animals for symptoms like coughing and fever. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lindsay Wright.
Before long, you'll have a chance not only to drive by a new facility at the corner of on Broadway near 35th Street, actually, on the IU Northwest campus, but you'll actually now have an opportunity to actually see the building, and especially on Friday afternoon, if you attend the dedication ceremony, you'll have a chance to actually go inside the new Arts and Sciences building on the Gary campus. Well, I have a number of people who are talking more detail about different aspects of the impact that this new Arts and Sciences building, which is a three-story, 126,300 square foot facility, is going to have on not only IU Northwest on the campus, but also as well on the Ivy Tech Community College campus, because Ivy Tech and Gary is going to get to share some of the facilities within this new Arts and Sciences building. And we'll also have a representative from the city of Gary to talk about the impact on the entire neighborhood as well as the entire city of Gary. Let's start first with taking a look at the building itself. And for that, we are turning to Professor Bonnie Neff, who is the chairperson of the IU Northwest Departments of Communication, Fine Arts, and Performing Arts. Bonnie, thank you for being with us in the studio.
Thank you for asking me, Chris.
Well, this is an interesting topic to talk about. It's one we've all been following here in the last few years. People physically have been able to drive by the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Some people are upset because of the traffic and the parking has been restricted while the construction work is underway. But the finished product is a beautiful sight. It's the best way to describe it. And hopefully, if you haven't had a chance to drive past there, that you make it a point to drive past there. It's, of course, if you're not familiar with where the IU Northwest campus is, it's directly south of the Borman Expressway, 8094, there on Broadway. The new facility is an opportunity to put together something that, unfortunately, Mother Nature took apart. And by that, we are referring to Tamarack Hall. Tell us, if you will, Bonnie, how all of this became apparent when departments had to scatter across the campus after the floods basically ruined Tamarack Hall.
Yes, it badly flooded. And, of course, that left the theater and it left all the arts and it left the communication departments spewed all over campus. And having been in both sites, it's very amazing to bring us together with the beauty of the inside and the exterior that introduces art and gives us space to develop art, enables us to have a theater which is developed by a New York architect is of awe to anybody that steps in there. And the Black Box, which is basically our studio theater, is the educational unit by Mark Baer, is amazing. And of course, we have the communication with television, radio, and we also have a public relations team that does a lot of different projects within that building. So, yes, it's a yay.
It's one that IU Northwest and obviously the administration and the faculty should be very proud of. And students certainly, when they get in there, mm-hmm. will be very proud of it, too. I know that mm-hmm. that some of the faculty members have had a chance to move into their offices in the new building already. And
yes.
pretty soon the classrooms will be in full use.
And
not only, and we'll find out more when we talk with Margaret Semmer, who is the Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs for Ivy Tech Community College there in Gary, as far as what the Ivy Tech people are going to be involved with. But it looks like that because of what had happened to Tamarack Hall, It gave the IU Northwest administration an opportunity to lobby with the officials in Bloomington and explain that we really and truly need a new building, not only to bring all these departments back together in one place for obvious reasons,
yes,
but obviously it's going to be a big benefit to the not only the rest of the IU Northwest campus, but for the city of Gary in particular.
Well, that means we have Arts on Broadway, and that brings the arts together for the community as well as for Northwest Indiana. And I think what's very important is that we have technology. Building this new building upgraded all our technology. We can do things now we could not have done before. So it was really an opportune moment after many years of being out of any kind of building. We're suddenly in a technology environment, which gives us sort of the state-of-the-art as far as the theater, the main stage, and it gives us a wonderful access to training. And then, of course, all the kind of technology you do in media graphics and public relations, which has to use all of that, plus radio, television, mass comm. So it really has given us a tremendous visibility on many levels and introducing the complexity of what we have to do today to create art, to create even the stage and to staging and to perhaps bring all the other mass comm things together to support the system.
Will, as far as you know, every single classroom in the new Arts and Sciences building be a smart classroom, so to speak?
Some are so smart that it's you have like eight video screens plus a large, huge video screen that, you know, brings everything together. I describe it as a sort of like a spaceship taking off. You have many, many controls, and the students have controls at their three big circle desks where they can control any of the videos. And so that gives us a new way of looking at things, and I know Dee here in the studio would appreciate that because we didn't have that before. Mm-hmm. And so it really is a different way of looking at things. We have more and more of the graphics available through you know, the kinds of technology that makes that available, the radio, the television. We're now looking at bringing sort of news every day through the television efforts by the students and the leader, Greg. But we do have Larry Bruckner, who ties all this together. He is our community arts coordinator, and what he's doing is integrating with all his years of experience, you know, at the center of the Munster Theater, as well as Highland, and as well as Munster Auditorium. What you have here is someone who has a business aspect to pulling the arts together. So Arts on Broadway will allow him, and he's done this already, develop contracts and develop the kinds of experiences that will bring in, as he used to do in Munster, 60 to 80 different kinds of venues that are going to really contribute to what we're doing in Northwest Indiana. Better for the students, better for the communities, and really growing the whole sense of our leadership in this area.
Now, the dedication ceremony is going to happen on Friday afternoon.
Yes.
There at the new Arts and Sciences building. But you say there's going to be another very special ceremony that's going to happen earlier in the day on Friday. Tell us about that.
Yes, we have the induction of our first class of freshmen. And we're very excited about this. We have John Briggs is in charge of that. And it's sort of a brainchild of his interest in really bring excitement to the campus. I think when they see the faculty in regalia, which they don't see till the end, might be kind of a surprise. We're all in these long gowns and these tassels flipping in the breeze. But this will make them really appreciate the fact that there's a lot of academic training that goes into this. And so the students will be introduced by coming into the theater. And, of course, the chancellor will be there. And he will certainly challenge them to next 4 years of experiences. And I think it's going to just set a milestone for much more interest for activities in this building.
Professor Bonnie Neff is the chairperson of the IU Northwest Departments of Communication, Fine Arts, and Performing Arts. And she's been giving us an overview on this new Arts and Sciences building that will be officially dedicated and open to not only students and faculty and staff at IU Northwest, but the community of Gary and the community at large as of Friday here. And Bonnie, thank you very much for spending some time
with us,
Chris, to talk about it here on Regionally Speaking. Continuing the conversation about the new Arts and Sciences building, we have IU Northwest economist, professor of economics, Micah Pollack, to talk about it. Micah, thanks for joining us here on Regionally Speaking today.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Give us an idea of the impact that this new Arts and Sciences building is going to have on the city of Gary, economic growth for the city, as well as the city's image.
Sure. So there's kind of two sets of effects that are happening here. The first is kind of the more obvious direct effect of actually building a building in the city of Gary and then continuing to maintain it. The spending for construction on materials and the workers, a lot of that money will get put back into the city of Gary, Northwest Indiana, as those workers, you know, spend their money at local restaurants and retail stores. And so the final price tag of the building is about $45 million. A lot of that money will get reinvested in Northwest Indiana. And that's kind of the big direct effect. But I think, you know, from my perspective, the more important effect is kind of this indirect effect on kind of all arts, culture, education, and perceptions here in Northwest Indiana, and for Gary in particular. You know, this new building means that the public's going to have access to performances and art exhibits, that are put on by the university, that increases the quality of place that they experience, and, you know, provides some excellent activities that they can do in the area, as well as kind of acting as a path for greater education. You know, we're sharing the building with Ivy Tech, and so this will kind of streamline the process of going maybe from a two-year degree to a four-year degree, which will increase the level of education in the city of Gary, Northwest Indiana in general, which in turn plays an important role in keeping our human capital strong and attracting new jobs and businesses to the area.
And we've already talked with Professor Neff about the IU Northwest impact here, and she mentioned about the arts and all the, since she's the chairman of the departments that will be covered under many of the classes and activities in the building as well. And we're going to talk with Margaret Salmon coming up here about the Ivy Tech Community College angle to the building as well. And it's interesting that here that we have a very important building coming that's actually on Broadway. You can't hardly miss it. It's right there, of course, in campus, and it's also in an area that is a big economic development area for the city of Gary. What kind of impact do you think on the city's image will this new arts and sciences building have?
Well, I'm optimistic it'll have a very large impact. You know, kind of historically, we often hear, if you're in Chicago or downstate Indiana, you often hear very negative news coming out of Gary, and this kind of overshadows a lot of the city's accomplishments. And so there are a lot of very positive changes happening in the city of Gary, and, you know, this new building kind of gives us an opportunity to highlight some of these changes and slowly change perceptions about Northwest Indiana and the city of Gary in particular.
We're talking with IU Northwest economics professor Micah Pollack about the impact that the new arts and sciences building on the Gary campus is going to have not only for the city of Gary, but also for the overall Northwest Indiana economy. And that's one of the things that you track as a regular part of your job on campus is the Northwest Indiana Economic Index. How do you think that, even though it's an indirect measure, you just kind of mentioned that here at the start of our conversation, what kind of impact do you think on economics overall do you think that eventually that the things that will happen in the building will play?
Well, I think that, you know, if you're a business maybe outside of the Northwest Indiana area and you're thinking about relocating to the area, you will read, you know, news about this redevelopment, the news about this investment, and, you know, this will kind of play into your decision, and you may think, well, you know, this is an area that's starting to kind of revitalize and starting to become, you know, a place that, you know, maybe we'd like to locate. And we're so close to Chicago here. We have a lot of amenities. We have a lot of access to transportation and infrastructure, great infrastructure. And so hopefully this will start to change perceptions in a way that we'll get people thinking more seriously about Northwest Indiana as a place to live and, you know, house your business.
Now, I know we're finishing up with the summer break, getting ready for a fall semester at IU Northwest, and people are coming back to campus, and, of course, people that stay often through the summer months as well with the classes and your regular work. You're one of these folks that are in and out of campus a lot, I know, during the summer months. What do you and your colleagues have to say about what you've seen as that building has gone up in the last couple of years or so since the ground was broken for the Arts and Sciences building?
It's really changed the perception. We, you know, are used to being in an area with a lot of derelict buildings that are slowly being leveled, and to see this new building kind of rise up from what was basically a parking lot before, and to go in and experience kind of how nice and new and high energy it is, and kind of the optimism and the potential that it has, is just completely changing perceptions. We don't talk so much about leveling more buildings now as we kind of shift the focus towards more building up new ones.
And we're going to hear from Bo Kemp with the city of Gary about the overall University Park area project and how this is affecting that and the improvements they're going to make. I guess that you mentioned about the fact that a parking lot was taken out to make room for this Arts and Sciences building. Any word word that you've heard on campus as to what you're going to have for parking once the new building's open, and a lot more things are going to be happening there.
Yeah, I mean, we are getting more interest, more, you know, students are arriving. Parking is always a little crazy at the beginning of the semester. The university's done a great job expanding parking options in other places and building some new lots. So luckily that won't be a problem. But, you know, I welcome traffic and, you know, development here in Northwest Indiana in the city of Gary. And, you know, if nothing else, just come drive down, look at the building, stop in, walk around. And it's starting to become kind of a little bustling hub here right off of Interstate 80 in the city of Gary.
We've been talking with Micah Pollack, who is an assistant professor of economics at IU Northwest, about the new Arts and Sciences building, the official dedication happening this Friday afternoon. Micah, thank you very much for being with us to talk about this, and we'll enjoy having a chance to come over to campus often and not only see the new building and what's happening inside that building, but checking out other things on the Gary campus. We appreciate you taking time to talk today.
Always a pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
Let's turn now to the aspect of how the city of Gary is benefiting in many different ways from the construction work, and now the finishing product, which is the Arts and Sciences building on the IU Northwest campus. Bo Kemp is the executive director of Gary Economic Development Corporation, and he is with us from his office. Bo, thank you for joining us here on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us, if you will, how the new building on the IU Northwest campus is really going to be an anchor for an entire neighborhood.
Yeah, it really is, and there's so many positive aspects of this, some of which have already been outlined by your guests, but just to put it in context for a lot of folks, some who may be less familiar with the area, you know, between Ivy Tech and IUN, there are about 10,000 people that work and go to school in really what's about a 12-block area, and of those 10,000, only about 300 live and work in the same neighborhood. And so a couple of years ago, the mayor had this vision that we would actually transform the entirety of this neighborhood by connecting the two universities and creating a plan that would include additional housing, additional retail, and other services that would really encourage more of those 10,000 people to live and work in the neighborhood, and thereby really transform everything that's happening in Gary. And frankly, it really started before a couple of years ago. In 2012, when the mayor was elected, one of the first meetings that she had with the governor at that time was to commit that the city of Gary would invest in demolition of some of the derelict buildings that was mentioned by your previous guest in order to demonstrate that the city was willing to put its money where its mouth is to promote the development and transformation of this University Park neighborhood. That led to the work with IUN, Chancellor Lowe, and the team, McRobbie, to secure the monies that had been allocated by the state for this building. And that led to the city 3 years ago applying for a choice neighborhood planning grant from the Housing and Urban Development Organization out of the federal government that gave us the $500,000 to plan over the course of 2 years how we could leverage buildings like the Arts and Science building and develop other buildings that would help transform that neighborhood.
And I also understand too, Bo, there's even impact, although you wouldn't think it because it's not very close by, but the Gary Chicago International Airport is getting some benefit from this as well too. And a lot of this, I understand, is because of the state and federal assistance.
Right. A lot of success begets success. And being able to demonstrate the city's willingness to invest in a project like this, even in our own small way around the demolition, helped to actually have the state follow suit. That furthered our opportunities to actually get the state to follow suit with the investments necessary at the Chicago International Airport, Gary Chicago International Airport, which was a major investment. It took several years, almost two decades, frankly, to actually get the runway extended, but that also got completed. And these sorts of projects where we've partnered with major institutions like Ivy Tech and IUN, the state and federal agencies to actually execute and complete projects have given a lot of confidence to people continuing to partner with this administration to execute these sorts of opportunities.
Now, we've spent a lot of time here in this particular segment talking about IU Northwest's role with the new Arts and Sciences Building. We've also mentioned, too, Ivy Tech Community College and the importance that they have in this, too, and the value that the entire city of Gary will get out of this one small particular location in the entire city of Gary. The Arts and Sciences Building will be a benefit in many different ways. Professor Neff talked about the theater opportunities, the theater on Broadway, and all kinds of other related programs that will come about that folks in Gary will be able to take advantage of it. Certainly, I would imagine that the Ivy Tech Community College campus is particularly pleased because that's going to lead to some opportunities for jobs and job training that the folks in Gary may not otherwise have.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And EDS and MEDS is often used as a phrase in the government juncture, which is about education and medical opportunities, really combine here. And Ivy Tech both has educational and medical services, along with IUN, which has similar sorts of services. This building helps tie those two campuses together and tie the entire neighborhood together. The opportunity of creating this hub, essentially at the corner of 35th and Broadway, is important because the traffic that already exists will actually be amplified by having this building here. And that actually puts us in a position to attract the kind of retail institutions that the entities, both the students as well as the residents, need, whether it be places to buy a sandwich and buy coffee or various services. But you need to have kind of the anchor institutions participate in a way to be able to go to, you know, kind of the cozies of the world of the Panera Breads. And I'm making these names up. These are not necessarily groups we've talked to, but to give just your listeners an idea of the types of services that are needed there that currently don't exist. One of the things that the city has also worked with the Gary Public Transportation Corporation, is the implementation of a rapid bus transit system, which will go down Broadway. So it will go from the train station downtown Gary all the way out to Crown Point, which means that you'll be able to take a rapid bus that will connect you to the South Shore and the South Shore into Chicago. That's really important for a lot of students who are attending both Ivy Tech and IUN, but it also further amplifies this hub that's right here on the corner of 35th and Broadway and allows us to bring in a variety of services that, essentially create a better neighborhood for the people who live in this area so that the services are in walking distance and accessible, and also more services to offer the students who are spending a tremendous amount of time, there during the day studying.
Now, I know this is IU Northwest and Ivy Tech Community College's day for the official dedication of the Arts and Sciences Building, but I'm sure that Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson and other folks there at City Hall are going to be very proud to attend that ceremony and take advantage of the opportunity to see another opportunity open up in the city of Gary for many, many years, unfortunately, have gotten kicked around, and here's a chance for the city of Gary to show themselves.
Well, as the mayor would like to say, the city of Gary is open for business. We, under her leadership, have been fortunate to be able to attract the investment partners, as I described, both at the federal, the state level, and also core institutions like Ivy Tech and IUN. We've also had some success more recently in attracting other businesses. And again, I would say the efforts of these partnerships and executing and opening buildings like this have helped. We've been able to bring Edsel Manufacturing, which has been able to hire over hundreds of people in the city of Gary, over from Chicago 2 years ago. We brought TMB2 Manufacturing from South Holland over to the city. In fact, just last week we had a groundbreaking for HMD Trucking, which does air cargo trucking and logistics and distribution from the Chicago area, that's moving here to the city of Gary. And so we've had some success recently in attracting businesses to move to Gary because I think they see the core of what the city has, which is hard to replicate. We're in a great location, 8094, accessible to the entire country within the 2.5-day drive. We got a lot of assets, and we're investing in those assets in a smart way, whether it be rapid bus transit, the extension of the double tracking for the South Shore rail, which will make us only about a 30-minute trip from downtown Chicago, which means that it's faster to go from Gary to downtown Chicago than it is to go from Skokie to downtown Chicago. And the fact that we've got some assets such as the airport and also the beginnings of a port, which are in the process of going through the ordinance analysis with the council right now, given our access to the Great Lakes, which also give us a leg up in terms of certain industries that need that kind of access for business. So, you know, we're on the come up. The mayor and our team have done a lot of work to try to position us to take advantage of the opportunities that exist right now. And we are very proud of the opening that will occur this Friday and expect that there's going to be other good news to bring to bear in short order.
Bo Kemp is the executive director of the Gary Economic Development Corporation. Mr. Kemp, thanks for being with us today to talk about how the city of Gary is certainly a key part in how the overall expansion of the IU Northwest campus with the addition of the new Arts and Sciences building, as well as the added facilities that will go to Ivy Tech Community College in Gary, how it'll benefit the community at large. Thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And that is it for Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte.